Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, sponsored by Cooker, spelt Quooker, pronounced Cooker, 100 degrees boiling hot water straight to your kitchen tap. Today is another special.
Woohoo!
It's a conversation with Ed Stafford and his wife, Laura Bingham, and talking about when they went on an adventure with their son, Ran. They're both, if you don't know, they're both adventurers, they're both explorers.
Survivalists.
Survivalists, yeah. I don't really know how you describe them, but they decided to go as a family to an island. And
so he normally does them on his own, doesn't he? He does the documentaries on his own.
They both do adventures on their own. They've come together as a family and they're going out. it's fascinating. I've seen the documentary, thoroughly enjoyed it. It brings up some interesting points because you are a family and not just an individual, so you've got other people to worry about.
I think you're right. I think you were right. You'll hear this later. The listener hear this later, but you were quite right that I think there might be some controversy about this. I think, which would be really interesting to see, because they were quite confident about it, weren't they?
Yeah.
And I think, as you say, there'll be someone trying to fill some column inches. Where
let's find out what they've got to say about it. Here's Ed and Laura.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, write into Dear Lovejoy.
Ed, Laura, thank you for joining me today in my kitchen. I bought you a present. I bought all my guests a present. I've decided to go into sustainable presents now. Well, not sustainable, but sort of like ethically correct presents. And so I buy people wine. I saw this. It's organic wine. And they're offsetting their carbon footprint making. I assume you two would be into this sort of thing.
Yeah.
The wine might taste awful. But you know,
wine that's really hit and miss?
I don't know, I've never tried it. I just saw it and I thought, you know, there's a great little story on it. It's called Vintage Roots, and I thought, you know, they've been doing this since 1986, give them a break. So do you two drink?
Thank you, mate. Yes, we do. Red wine,
partially sometimes.
Okay, good.
Like every evening.
Majestic wine earns a lot of money off us.
All right, I've seen your documentary, Man, Woman, Child.
Wild.
Yeah.
And you love it.
I did like it. It made me very apprehensive because your son's involved in it. Out on the 29th September, by the way, Discovery Channel. Just before we get into that, so people who've listened to this don't really understand who both of you are, can you explain what you've both done?
Okay, yeah.
Yours is a lot, isn't it?
I left the military in 2002, led expeditions for about 10 years, and then came up with a daft idea to do a very big expedition, which was to walk the length of the Amazon River. And because nobody had done it before, it got quite a bit of media attention. I thought it would take a year, two and a half years to walk from the source all the way to the mouth. I was very lucky when I got back. I'd just taken a little handycam with me and recorded it, and Discovery Channel bought the footage, turned it into a program, and I think I've now I'm in the middle of filming the 10th series for Discovery Channel.
So, and two of you set off.
Two of us set off,
and you're the only one who made it.
Yeah, I'm not because he like died or anything like that.
but he just went. This is. Did he at some stage go, this is nuts? I've got to give this up. I've got to have a life.
I think I've mellowed a bit now, but back in the day, I could be a bit of a you know what, I think. And then I got frustrated with him, and we fell out massively.
Really?
Basically. Yeah, it was a bit sad. I was meant to be his best man at his wedding, but he's got married, and we've never seen each other since the day he left. And you know,
it's tough though, isn't it? I watched that James Cracknell, Ben Fogle thing once. Mm. I know them both when they start rowing across the Atlantic, and it's just so bizarre when you've got two people like that together. You've got James Cracknell who wants to win whatever, and Ben Fogle wants to survive, and you put the two of them together. It was horrible watching their clashing,
and it was very similar in terms of. Very different personalities. He wanted to have a laugh. He wanted to, you know, go into restaurants and eat nice food and stuff. And I was very much, mate, this is a world first expedition. You know, we need to be frugal. We need to save our money. We need to, you know. Anyway, He's a lovely guy. Without him, I wouldn't have ended up starting the whole thing because I don't think I would have had the balls to do it on my own.
Right.
And so I owe him a lot. You know, it is sad. It's the one little negative about that expedition that that friendship soured.
But your life's been amazing since. You've done so many.
It's not been bad. Yeah, it's not been bad. I mean, that led into doing survival shows.
Yeah.
60 days on an island on my own, naked, was the first one. Then that spun on into doing programs, and it's weird because initially it was all quite chest beaty. It was a little bit ego driven because I was, you know, a younger man. But it's evolved into something which actually now, having got a wife and a little boy, I'm quite proud of. And you still go away and do these amazing trips, and they're quite humbling, and they keep me grounded. I do pinch myself every day. I'm very lucky.
I'm jealous because it sounds so exciting. And what's your background in exploring and adventures and
so
expeditions?
I left college, and that sort of stereotypical, don't really know what I want to do with my life. I had sort of eating problems and sort of mental problems, and I was very discontented and unhappy with life in England. So I literally ran away, went traveling for like 4 years. Did jaguar conservation in Mexico, taught English, worked in polo, worked in jumping, sort of traveled the world, was an au pair. And then I found myself in Mexico, and then I sailed the Atlantic back to England because I didn't have enough money to get home. And then when I got home, I realized that the one constant over the 4 years that made me happy was the travel. So then I tried making a career of it, planned to cycle South America with no money, and met Ed just before. And then led a world first expedition to locate the source of the Essequibo River in Guyana, and then make a world first descent. So Ram was 8 months old when I left to do that, which can be viewed as sort of a bit, I don't know, whatever you want to term you want to put in. But they came out and visited me in the jungle when Ram was like 9 months old, and it was a lovely experience for the whole family. And we realised how adaptable Ram was at 9 months old, and then that's sort of when we realized that we could start doing things as a family. And I think I learned on that expedition that my son was so resilient and so amazing, and probably the most important thing was that he had his sort of parents around him. So then we started sort of hatching more family ideas because I wanted to take him with me.
Okay, I'll go into that in a minute, but why do you think you were feeling miserable about life over here
in England?
Yeah.
Just my dad fell over. I used to do ice hockey, so he fell over and got a blood clot in the head, had a personality change, left home, mum crying in my arms, didn't know how to cope with it. It was just for my GCSEs, and just learnt really inappropriate coping mechanisms, really. Is that influential?
Do you think life, because we're going to get on to why you've left to go on to your little venture, but do you think life's quite hard? Modern life's quite hard. I mean, you're going to into an island without anything. Mm. That's hard. But do you think our children are growing up in quite a hard environment at the moment in the West?
Like, yes and no. I think we're over-parenting a lot in a way. We're trying to protect them too much. So I think we're telling them you can achieve whatever you want if you put your mind to it, but we're not teaching them the practical tools to pick themselves back up. We were in an indoor play centre, and there were two children that got stuck on ladders just off the floor because they were too scared to go up, didn't know how to go down, and their parents had to go and rescue them. Whereas our two-year-old is going headfirst down this huge slide because...
Yeah, he has got your genes, though, you two.
But I went to South Africa a few times with my parents, but at 13, my dad said, let's go to South Africa to see our family. And I said, no, I want a TV. I'd prefer to have a new TV. So I wasn't born with particular amazing explorer genes. They were created out of necessity, out of situations.
Yeah, Will Storr, who's been on, a great journalist who's been on our podcast, he's written a book called Selfie, which is, I'm just pointing at it behind you there. It's not about taking pictures of yourself, it's about the self-esteem movement, which happened in the 80s with Thatcher and Reagan. They loved it. And give your children total self-esteem. The downside of it sounds like a really good idea. The downside of it, you tell children they're special constantly, and then one day they wake up and go, do you know what? I seem to be the same as everyone else.
Yeah.
I think there's a difference. Self-esteem doesn't necessarily mean that you're big-headed or have your ego inflated. I certainly found, wasn't really aware of it beforehand, but I think I walked the Amazon to prove not just to myself, but to other people, that I was super tough. I think it was born out of insecurity, is yeah. what I'm saying. And so I needed to do something on a very big stage, beat my chest, so that people would say to me, you know, you're fucking tough, Ed. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you can swear. Same with my career. Exactly the same. And get myself on telly so everyone can go.
Validate you.
Yeah, exactly.
Bizarrely, although it's evolved into a more healthy thing now, I think that was the initial motive. And so, yeah, if we can bring our little boy up so he doesn't feel he needs that external validation, so that he actually believes in himself, yeah. believes that the world's a nice, safe place, and that can enter the world without having to, just being himself, basically, yeah. without having to adapt his own behaviour to get other people's approval. That would be good.
I want him to learn also that he can pick himself back up, that his parents don't have to be there, like literally holding his hands with every single step, that he's got his own ability to climb up a ladder and figure out how to climb down. And don't get me wrong, I'm not just leaving him to jump off everything. I'm there yeah. with my hands underneath him just in case, but I won't help him do something if I think he can do it. I'll tell him, you can do it. You can do it on your own. I'll be here if you need me, but just you fall off that 1 foot drop because you'll learn how to pick yourself up.
We'll find out how he got on in the expedition in a couple of minutes. But let's, first of all, how did you two meet?
Laura was planning an expedition to cycle across South America with no money. She wrote to me asking me for advice because I'd walked the Amazon. I might have Googled her to see if she was good looking.
You're not allowed to do that. That's unprofessional.
And then I posted a photo about it on my social media, and my sister messaged me saying she sort of fancies herself a psychic, and she went, he's your forever man. And I went, no, he's too old, I'm not interested.
Yeah, and then, he was too old, but
but when we met, I was just saying that when we met, I was 23 and he was 39, so I was like, oh, he's in his 30s, that's fine. Like, yeah. going 23, being with someone in their 30s, that's completely normal. It only clocked in my head when he turned 40 and I was 24, and I went, oh, it's that doesn't sound so. That doesn't sound so okay.
Moving on. Moving on.
Are you glad I brought this up, Ed?
Yeah, thanks.
But yeah, it's like, yeah, we're mentally on the same.
Yeah, and also you have the same feelings about life and the yeah. world and goals and wanting to travel and everything yeah. else and have expeditions and adventures. I mean, that's really important because
it's hard
you know,
to find.
Yeah, because you don't want to go out with a man who just wants to sit and watch Netflix all night.
No.
And you don't want to go out with a woman who wants to sit and watch Netflix.
Bang your fingers.
I mean, I think we do both have, it's a risk thing actually. And if there's anything I do agree with Bear Grylls on, it is the fact that he really does believe in adding risk into your lives in order to become, I suppose, better versions of yourself. And I think, you know, we do live in a slight world of helicopter parenting, of wrapping yeah. children in cotton wool. And actually, I think where people grow the most, where people develop the most, is where there is actually a consequence to your actions. Yeah. And if you get it wrong, you have to suffer those consequences. And I think that's quite important. I really do.
I always quote David Goggins on this. Do you know David Goggins?
No.
Oh, you got to look up David Goggins. He's amazing. Ex-Navy SEAL. Right. But he always says, he's just obsessed with pushing himself. And he always says, there is no finishing line in life. Don't think you're going to get to the finish line and sit on the beach. You've got to keep going and going and keep surging for an adventure. I mean, there is a finishing.
Death does sounds like a pretty good finishing line.
Well, it depends on your religion. But,
true.
But yeah, but it, you know, whilst you're alive,
yeah.
there is no finish line. Keep going, keep pushing, keep doing stuff. Look up Goggins, you'll love him. He's absolutely nuts. Broke all the ultra marathon records and pull-up records and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, in a weird way, I mean, I know you've had Steve and Helen on this show, haven't you? Steve Batchelor yeah. and Glover. I mean, they came to our wedding and we went to theirs, actually. And I don't think we're stereotypically, we just push the barriers back and we want to achieve more and more. And I mean, we do go to the pub a lot more than they do. And,
you know, there's a reason that we're a little bit
more. We're a little bit more make it up as you go along, and you know, and so I don't want to really paint this image that we're just forever pushing barriers and getting bigger and wiser and tougher. And yes, of course, that's part of having these adventures, but
there's a lot of stumbling.
But also, I don't know. We want to just embrace all these life opportunities, I think. And I don't want to be harnessed by, you know, but what if he was to get into trouble, or what if you were to come to any harm? Because life is, you know, surely we live too much in fear, I think, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And we're not uber achievers, but we just want to embrace life and have the best life possible, I think.
Well, let's talk about the documentary then. Cause it's quite an interesting idea. Tell us about it.
Okay. Man, Woman, Child, Wild was basically, I mean, I've always thought one man on his own surviving in the middle of nowhere is a slightly unrealistic concept. You know, you'd probably have dependents, you'd probably have people that you cared about if you were to end up in a survival situation. On top of that, I've also spent a lot of time with indigenous tribes now. And, you know, you see children running in and out of each other's houses with huge grins on their faces and they're super happy, but they've not got, you know, diapers and dummies and bottles and plastic toys and all of these trappings of everyday life that everyone told us that we needed as soon as Laura got pregnant. So I thought, surely there is potentially something to learn from this, and there is a simpler way of bringing children into the world that doesn't have all of this nonsense sort of materialistic trappings and, you know, timings for when they go to bed and all this nonsense. And there must be a more natural way to parent. So we basically came up with this concept of marry the two ideas. Would it be possible if we were to say goodbye to all of this sort of the rules, the regulations, the material stuff of parenting and go and live on an island for a month, see if we can do it. One, see if we can do it. And two, see whether do we become closer as a family? Does Ran's personal evolution accelerate? You know, do we actually see the benefits from his lack of screen time, for example, and engaging with nature more? And I thought that would be a fascinating experiment to undergo.
I could see after watching it how much it changed the dynamic, as you say, just one person, either of you going in, it's just you. Suddenly when there's a team of you, husband, wife, and are you married?
Yeah.
Husband, wife, and child. Suddenly you all care about each other, which is really interesting. And you care about and you also rely on each other. And that dynamic completely changes when you're out there. So was that really, did you imagine that to be the case as soon as you got there?
It was quite interesting because we didn't have any arguments. Before we left, we were putting together this greenhouse and we had like this huge argument. He was like, oh, I know how to do it. And I was like, no, I know how to do it. And it was like this huge ruckus. And I was like, if we can't even put a greenhouse up, how the hell are we going to survive on an island together? This is going to be a disaster. We're just going to be at each other's throats the whole time. But then soon after getting on the island, we realised that arguments are actually quite a luxury to have. On the island, you can't storm off in different directions because someone's got to be with Ran and you've got jobs to do. There's firewood. There's things that you have to constantly keep maintaining. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have the luxury of any arguments other than the one that we had on day one.
I might have on day one said, we're not filming a fucking YouTube video, which wasn't my highest point on the island.
No, he was like, who's got the 8 series on Discovery Channel? And I was like, oh, he pulled that one out.
That was brilliant.
And it was hilarious because I went to storm off, got 5 steps away, and it was like that, damn it, I can't go anywhere. We'll have to sit on this rock and talk it through.
So explain what you actually took with you then.
Okay, we had the clothes that we were standing up in.
Yeah.
We had water, the first week's worth probably of water for Ran, and we had a massive bunch of bananas for Ran as well, because again, this was quite a big thing. I'm prepared to go into a survival situation and become very uncomfortable in order to get one through the survival priorities, but two to get the right footage that you need to make a program. And then immediately we started, I am not prepared for Ran to be uncomfortable. And I think that was one of the big things. So it wasn't just a survival experiment. It was also, I don't want to put my son through any discomfort, really. And he only, in the whole thing, he only really had mild discomfort. He had a bit of a heat rash. But I think, he had a bit of a chest infection when we went and visited the Mentawai tribe prior to it. But that was actually caught on the plane, which he could have caught if he'd been going on a holiday.
What about things like sunscreen?
So I don't actually like sun cream in general. I'm nervous that, you know, we were recommended to smoke to reduce stress and then it became the biggest leading cause of cancer. So I'm nervous that sun cream is actually in 10 years' time going to be the biggest cause of skin cancer or something. So even at home, I just try and keep him out of the sun. I try and keep him in the shade. I try and keep him in UV clothing. And it was the same on the island. He went on with a UV rash vest, so he had to wear that when he went in the sun. And otherwise, I just kept him in the shade because I don't, even at home, I don't like him being in the direct sun.
Yeah, but you're saying you're not sort of endorsing going in the sun, are you?
No. I'm not going go in the sun and get burned. Because
the levels of skin cancer going up in this country are off the scale because people are still going out in the sun constantly.
No, you just need to stay in the shade under in the shade of a tree, under an umbrella, like on a veranda, not to be in direct sunlight without a UV protection layer.
What about things like stuff that we all become used to as tourists, stuff to stop mozzies biting you and stuff like that? He did get bitten,
and you know, the camera, it's very difficult to hide mosquito bites, especially when they're on your son's forehead and stuff like that. I think at the end of the day, again, it comes back to the level of risk that you're prepared to take. With, you know, I love Ran, aside from Laura, more than anybody else in the entire world. Would I ever want anything to come, harm to come to him? No, I wouldn't. Am I prepared to take him somewhere where there are mosquito-borne diseases? Well, yes, if he takes the same precautions as me. So he was on pediatric Mallarone so that he wouldn't get malaria if he got bitten by mosquitoes, and he did get bitten by mosquitoes.
Not that many times. I don't remember any times.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was a few bites on him, but I think, again, you have to balance it. You know, he's had this extraordinary life experience where he's had 24 hours a day access to both parents for a month on a desert island, playing with hermit crabs, like void of all screens and all of the sort of things that might make him angsty and sort of pent up. And we saw such a transition in him from somebody who might throw a few tantrums and get a bit angry to this little boy who's got bright, wide eyes, who's always smiling, who's, his first sentence on the island, "Daddy eat nut," was, you know, subject, object, verb, or whatever it is. And, you know, I think, yes, okay, there was a few bites, but obviously didn't get any sort of illness from it, and yes, there was a bit of a heat rash. Was it worth it? 100%.
Tell from where I'm talking to you, you two are quite defensive of this, obviously, because you're gonna have people who, by the way, can I tell you, I've watched it, and all that comes across is that you really love your son and that you're caring for them. And it's a fascinating experiment. You also look like you really love each other as well and really care for each other. So it's a really nice watch in that respect. However, there will be people who find it uncomfortable because he's so young. How old is he when you?
He was 20 months, but I hope so.
20
I
months.
Hope.
But you'll also get columnists. You know this, because the way columnists work is they have to say something extreme to get people to click to make money. That's how the media works.
Yeah.
So you are going to have, I imagine, as soon as it goes out, you're going to have people, columnists, go, these two are being irresponsible.
So. Because I want it to confront what people think about parenting. I think we're almost over-parenting so much that we're not teaching our children the ability to cope with things in life. So I want people to look at the way that they're parenting and saying, okay, are we actually not going on holiday, or are we not going camping because I'm too nervous about our child might poo so bad that it comes out of their nappy and I'm not going to have a shower to be able to clean them. And I want people to think about, you know, are they putting their children in too much cotton wool and not exposing them to things in life? So I hope it gets multiple different opinions, because then it's causing people to look at the way that they're parenting and look at their lives and maybe go out camping again.
So, all right. So I'm always fascinated. I've discussed this on the podcast before. When I've traveled to Thailand or places in Asia, Africa, and other places where it's, I'm not sure this is going to be the right term, but more developing worlds, the children seem to be happy and get on with life. Like, you'll see them on a scooter. If I'd be terrified to stick my six-year-old on a scooter, right? And they put two-year-old kids on scooters and stuff, and the kids just get on with it. Do you think we moddy coddle our children too much over here? Do you think we're making them completely unable to take any responsibility for any parts of their lives?
I think fear is a far bigger factor in Western life than it is in potentially South America or even Southern Europe, where you see loads of people, like, a whole family could be on that scooter, couldn't they? Children, two kids and a baby and a wife. And I think death is a real taboo still in this subject, in this country. You know, if you're brought up in a little village and you're used to killing chickens and then killing a pig and, you know, slaughtering the animals that you're about to eat, then you understand the cycle of life and death a lot more, and you're not necessarily fearful of death in that same way. But mm-hmm. I think we're terrified of death. You know, the worst thing that could ever happen is to die. And I think personally the worst thing that could ever happen is not to live your life to the full. And that sounds a little bit cliche,
no,
but
I love it.
But I 100% buy into that, and I think that's why we're doing what we're doing. That's why we're prepared to take the risks.
Sorry, I was just imagining like, no, I think the worst thing would be Rand dying. No, no, I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure I don't want
this. It's the whole concept of sort of better to live a year as a lion than a lifetime as a sheep.
You,
or something.
Yeah, but anyway, trust me, I'm not going to let my Rand die. Like,
I always, everything. I love taking my children camping. It's that weird thing. Actually, the campsite we used to go to one year got Wi-Fi in it, and we were all horrified because suddenly we could get communication. There was like a light way out. Before that, there was none. Yeah. And the relief and release you get when you just put your kids in a field and say, there you go, they got nothing apart from a field. Mm-hmm. And the enjoyment they get out of that. Now, it's a pretty safe environment. It's not like what you did with Ram, but did he change dramatically when he was there?
Yeah.
What was he like?
Okay, so because of the like dangers, just the natural dangers around, the insects, the sea, we had to play with him one-on-one because that's how we could guarantee that he was safe. So a morning's job for me or an afternoon's job for Ed was to play with Ram whilst the other person did all the work. And so we were making, like digging holes in the sand and filling it with hermit crabs and watching them grow out, putting sticks, and the hermit crabs would walk up the sticks. I'd put hermit crabs on my hand and he learned sort of way, and then the crab would like pop its head out and he'd get so excited about that. It was like a moving toy, and then he'd go to pick it up, and just the enjoyment that we got out of crabs just excited this beauty in his face and the naivety.
But then he ate them.
Not the tiny ones.
He was eating crabs.
Yeah.
But that's brilliant for him, because we don't you find we become so far removed from nature? Mm. I mean, I do my show on Sunday brunch, and we have guests who come on and say things like, I don't like the texture. It's like, what happened to us that we can't eat something because of a texture? Or now every guest who comes on is gluten intolerant or a vegan or plant-based or keto. Or they're doing all these myriad diets where when you lot are on that island, you're like, we need calories and we need to get them in quickly. Coconuts, crabs.
We were worried before we left because we bought coconuts and we tried to feed him coconuts and he ate them and spat them out and ate them, and he wouldn't really eat coconuts. And we were like, this isn't going to go well if he's not eating coconuts, because that's going to be a staple. And when we got on the island at home, he always asked for TT and crackers, TV. And when we got on the island on the first day, he went, cracker? And I was like, no, sweetheart, there's no crackers here. There's no crackers. There's coconuts and there's some bananas and there's crab. And he just went, And then he ate coconut just like it was a cracker.
He completely adapted.
And I was really worried that he wouldn't adapt to the food. And I thought we might be there for 2 days, run out of bananas, and we'd have to go. But I was so proud of him, how he adapted so quickly, because children have a beautiful ability to accept what is in front of them. And if they have different options of different textures and different foods, of course they're going to pick the one that they prefer the most, that has the most sugar or the most processed carbs. But if the only option that they have in front of them, which their parents are eating to, and that their his main example, the person that he's going to emulate and mirror, are doing the exact same things as him, it's normal.
I imagine, you know, apparently you can go 3 weeks without food, just about. I imagine Ran could go probably 3 or 4 days before he gets really seriously ill. So that must have been a huge concern. What's great about watching it is when you were feeding him crab and stuff, he was just taking it and eating it. Like, they didn't even question it. And then he was going, yeah, he liked it.
We were eating it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He genuinely looked really happy. I've only seen obviously an edited version of what was going on, but the kid looked amazingly happy. Like, wow, look at this playground I'm in for a month.
We had to hunt through the footage to get stuff of him smiling. He's quite feral at home. You know, we drop stuff on the floor, we let him pick it up. We went to a wedding in London, didn't we? In Kensington the other day, and he was on this. It all spilled out of this house. He was in the streets, and he was picking stuff up.
You
and mothers were giving me the sort of death stares. And I was like, I believe in, you know, the whole concept of building up a sort of tolerance for infection. And then I looked down and he had a cigarette in his mouth.
But the thing is about it...
I can't believe you just told that story to the world that you've been caught on some of the fag bones.
The thing is, though, about it is children do go around licking the floor and stuff.
Yeah. And now he's got cold sores.
We had Megan Rossi on here, who is discussing gut health. And we need our kids to have, you know, don't eat mud, but they do need to get around the dirt and mud because they need those microbes inside them. You're too clinical, that's why she believes we're getting a lot of allergies.
He does eat mud though, doesn't he?
But he's only ever been sick once, and that was after he had a bag of Haribo at someone's wedding. Yeah. He then got hand, foot, and mouth.
So listen, when you arrive on an island, you've got a little bunch of bananas, you got some water. The first thing for him, by the way, the water was for him, wasn't it? You were looking for fresh water for yourselves. Mm. But where's the first thing you need? It seemed to me that you thought, because he's so young, you thought this kid needs shelter. Mm. Is that was?
Well, there were tropical storms hitting the island.
Storms coming in.
There'd been a couple hitting the island a couple of days before we went in, so we were super aware of it. And to be honest, caught out by it as well. It was quite terrifying. Looking at Laura, we'd got an emergency fleece that Ram was wrapped up in, so he wasn't cold. And actually, he fell asleep within 20 minutes or something of the storm hitting. But we've got a tiny little shelter about the size of a kitchen table that Laura was sort of huddling underneath, holding this baby. And I was just like, what on earth have I actually brought my family into? This is ridiculous. He fell asleep. You were a bit concerned, weren't you? And I was running around trying to make the shelter a little bit better than it was. I think that was the moment where I did question, is this the right thing to do? But, you know, the storm blew through. We ended up making a much bigger, more solid house, and we got through it. But, I mean, yeah, there were conversations before. Should we go onto an island with a pre-built shelter? But I'm glad we didn't. I'm glad we started from scratch. But it did mean that, crikey, I was quite stressed in those first few days, definitely. Yeah.
What I couldn't work out with, were you two getting enough calories?
Yeah. I mean, there was so many coconuts. There were so many hermit crabs. Yes. That if we'd wanted to, we could have just eaten all day long. I mean, from that respect, it was a bountiful island. Yeah.
It was good because you sort of learn, after you've been there for a few days, you start learning when the tide goes in, that actually there are certain places that hermit crabs go to roost when they're like the roost. They go to hide, just perch up on little trees. They go to hide when the tide comes in. So after a few days, I started learning there was like a hollowed out tree that would just have 10 really large hermit crabs in. So when the tide comes in, I go and collect all the hermit crabs, go to all these locations, and it was great fun with Ran walking the beach trying to find
them. How did your roles develop as you arrived on the island? How did you think about each other, and did your did you take traditional gender roles?
I'm quite a headstrong female.
Yeah.
So initially I was like, Ed, you're going to be babysitting. I'm not going to be stuck at home babysitting. Not that you can babysit your own child, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
I think everyone refers to it as babysitting.
Yeah.
But I surprised myself with, as soon as we got on the island, I literally held on to Ran like a limpet because I was like, I know he's safe in my arms. If he's off the ground in my arms, I know he's safe. So it surprised me how much I wanted to just hold him. But we settled into it, and I went spearfishing off a cliff and snorkeling to reef swimming to try and find shellfish. And I gutted the pig that you caught and went fishing in the mangroves and built a fishing rod. So I think we were really equal, and you spent just as much time in camp babysitting Ran.
Yeah, I mean, we have role shared. You know, and before the experiment, you know, I think I was at home, lucky enough to be at home at the first 7 months of Ran's life, so we were both doing all the nappies and the bottles at night and all that sort of stuff. I think on the island, if I'm honest, they could have shown a lot more of Laura doing things like spearfishing at night and stuff like that, but we're almost hand-holding an audience into a new genre of TV here, and I think that actually played into it quite a lot. You know, this is the people that are used to Ed Stafford shows. Suddenly he's got his wife and his kid, and hang on, I'm watching Discovery Channel, do I really want to see something domestic? So I think Discovery had to be slightly careful not to overlure it, you know, but
I wanted the relationship.
Glad I'm on this side of the table.
I think there is possibility for this to lead into more stuff.
I think it's exciting.
And as it evolves, I think you'll see more of that. But I think this was handholding quite a stereotypical male skewed audience into a show like this, and you've got to
so you
bit.
Who built the house then? I know I watched you build because you built a big shelter.
We both thatched. I mean, there was a storm coming in.
I was better at
your
it,
thatching
though.
Was better Laura.
Yeah. 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 I mean, like, yeah, it was interesting because like nearer the end I did feel slightly more comfortable in. I was just naturally better at the thatching, for example, and I like foraging,
if I say so myself.
I mean, the proof was in the pudding though.
Yeah.
And I do like the female roles, even
sorry
So we found it very interesting that I did naturally orientate to those female roles. Like at home, I do all the vegetable gardening and I have loads of house plants and I do enjoy spending the time with Ran. But it was nice that it was a choice. And I love the fact that Ed is such a progressive man that he is happy to do as much parenting or as little parenting and have very diverse roles. I thought it was a lovely experience that was shared beautifully.
You two have travelled the world. What do you think about the change in the gender roles that we're doing? I mean, I'm really hands-on dad, like you, and I love it. I love being a parent. So, you know, I enjoy all that sort of stuff, and I've always done nappies, cooking, the whole lot. But you've travelled a lot of the world. A lot of the world isn't doing this, are they, as much?
No, they're not. I think we're really lucky. I think we're in a really fortunate position. I consider it a privilege to be at home. When Laura did that trip down the Essequibo River in Guyana, I was at home with, I think Discovery gave me 3 months off work. And so I was at home being a dad for 3 months, and it was a privilege, and I loved it. It's unconventional. It's a little bit more Scandinavian, isn't it, to have that sort of dual parenting thing.
But we're moving in the right direction. Because I always question myself, because there's so few people in the world doing what we're trying to do over here.
The thing is, I don't think we would ever go as far as to say, look, I mean, at the end of the day, I end up mowing the lawn more and you end up... We do have some quite stereotypical roles, but then again, I'm away a lot, and then when you're away, I'm doing stuff. I just think it's nice to be able to step into each other's roles. And you know, we end up I think, having a fuller life because, you know, to not... To have one person at home who says, oh, I don't mind you going away, eventually they're going to become a little bit resentful and a little bit bitter. But if both of you are going away and you're both stepping into the sort of menial tasks when the other person is away, then that you've got less chance to become resentful. Do you know what I mean? Over a long term, because you're both doing both, I think that's got to allow for
Oh, I was just going to say, and also I love doing this programme and doing the filming aspect to an expedition, because I know expedition life, but I don't know the stresses of filming. So when we went on the island and had to self-film it all, I then had a much better understanding of what Ed goes through when he's away, and like how many times you have to walk up and down the beach to put the camera down. And like, we got on the island and I was like, we need to get a shelter, we need to get Rand safe. And he was like, but we need to film it all as well. And I'm like, oh, bloody God, yeah, okay, well, you do that. and it's just that, oh, we need to find like shelter and stuff. And he's like, I need to put the camera down. You can have to walk back.
How's that working then? Because every poignant moment you've got to capture, haven't you? Yeah. Is it just instinct now, natural for you, Ed, just to get the camera out and do it?
A lot harder with a wife and child there, definitely. I mean, yeah, I know I'm used to doing it, but it's another 50% on top of surviving. It makes it 50% harder. But yeah, I mean, filming the relationship as well was even harder, because you're like, oh, crikey, are we then, as soon as we press record, are we then acting from that point onwards? Or is this still a genuine conversation? Or are we subliminally aware of how we're going to come across to the audience? Or I thought it was a lot harder. Yeah.
How does the relationship change? Because if you're just over here in Britain and, you know, and Ed leaves or Laura leaves and one of you doesn't come back, you can always get a divorce. But over there, one of you doesn't come back, you're in shit because you're on your own with a son. So does the relationship change dramatically? You really rely on each other.
I'm quite a relaxed person at home. So if you want to go out, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Just give me a text. It's fine. Whereas on the island, I was such a female dog.
What does that mean?
So like when he went away and didn't come back early, I was that sort of really stereotypical marching up and down the beach. And I remember him walking down the beach being like, hi, love. And I'm there going, don't you hi me. I'm literally going to punch you in the face because he went away.
I think, to be fair to you, that was because the stakes were higher. You know, we were reliant on each other. And I was worried that that was going to make it a slightly claustrophobic environment because you didn't have the space to go away from each other because you were super reliant on each other to look after the little boy. But I think we ended up bonding more because of it in the end, really. Mm. If you look at the whole picture, I think it ended up being something we were quite proud of having gone through together and shared that responsibility. You know, you come out of something quite intense and we had got closer, I think, but it was because we'd sort of shared that responsibility.
And how conscious of you, Ed, are you thinking, I need to get some good stuff for a TV show here?
Oh, the whole time, yeah. Part of the stress is the little boy. Part of the stress is working with Laura. Part of the stress is not coming home with the right footage, you know? At the end of the day, if it's a boring show, then no one's going to watch it. And, you know, the mortgage doesn't get paid, so...
Right.
It is all part and parcel of it. Yeah, I put pressure on myself for that sort of thing as well. I don't want to make a rubbish programme. Mm. I want to make something that's great. And so, yeah, it's one of the strains.
Would you go and kill the pig as well?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think was the real danger out there? Was it the weather? Or is it the insects, snakes, animals? I don't know what animals were there. What was the real dangers for you? I mean, obviously, contaminated water, which I won't spoil it for people watching, but you know that could be dangerous as well, can't it? What are the real dangers?
I think the island was actually relatively kind to us. We had food, we had water eventually that was good enough to drink. There was loads of materials to build a shelter, and there was a what's the other one? Fire. Oh yeah, we got a fire going eventually.
Such a blur.
It's weird. You don't want to be flippant about anything, and yet I honestly think with the medical backup and the satellite phones and the risk assessments and everything like that, he would have been more at risk if we'd gone on holiday to the Maldives. You know, I genuinely think that, and it's all about, I think, creating a safe environment to have an authentic experience within. And that's what we did. You know, there was so many risk assessments, you know, especially with a project like this with a 2-year-old boy. We weren't being reckless with his life at all. Mm-hmm. You know, there were doctors that could have been on location within 20 minutes of us getting out the satellite phone.
Right.
And as a result, because, you know, we are making television, we are doing a social experiment, essentially, within some safe parameters, but we're making those parameters... I suppose broad enough to have a genuine experience within, and I think that was the balance that we were trying to get.
Do you reckon you could live there for a year?
We probably could, but would I want to?
I think the thing that I felt that we were lacking, we almost got lonely as a family. You know, it's weird. We had all those survival priorities.
Yeah,
we could provide for ourselves. We had the two people. We both had the two people that mean the most to us in the world. But we were like, we miss community. We miss having mates to go to the pub with. We miss having mum to come around and look after Ram for a little bit.
So we could go off and walk down the beach alone. That was highlighted.
It was too intense and a little bit collectively lonely, would you agree?
Yeah, because when one has to stay back at camp to look after Ram, the other person has to go and do a job. It gets lonely going out and doing that alone. Like when you needed more mangrove wood because it's a really, really hard wood for the fire that you were trying to create. It was fine going and doing it, but going to the mangroves alone, chopping the wood, getting mud splattered on your face and then being like, oh, there's no one to laugh at that with, and just having to wipe it off and make sort of a makeshift way of carrying all this wood back. It's fine, But if you had a friend come with you, you could make a bit of a joke out of it and make it a bit more humorous. Yeah. Whereas there was, yeah, you're right, a collective.
What they should do is a TV show. You know how like all the Marvel characters come together? Yeah. They should do it with all you, yes, like explorers and I adventurers and stuff. Bear Grylls, everyone, all of you, all onto one island with all your partners and kids and everything. And then we just leave you there for a year or so.
Love it. That'd be too easy.
Love it. Great idea for a show.
And yeah, then you'd probably, you'd come back and you'd have built your own pub.
Bear messaged have it all there. Bear did message me when he saw this show being announced, saying that is it Shara, his wife?
Yeah.
Shara Grylls. Right. He said he'd tried to get her to do a similar thing when the boys were really young. But she said no, she wasn't up for it. But I think you could tell he was a little bit like, I wish I'd done that. But you know, it's an amazing experience, and crikey, I'd love to do it with lots of other survivors.
And I just go back to the food thing very quickly, the calories thing. What do you think about the way our relationship with food now over here? Because when you end up in a situation like you're in, you're thinking coconuts, crabs, whatever else I need to eat, I need to get calories on board, I'll kill a pig, I don't care, my son needs to eat.
Yeah.
Our relationship is meat comes in a plastic thing and it comes in a little square so we can't actually see what it is. What do you think about our relationship with it?
Well, I think... again, building on what Laura said about, you know, how adaptable Ran proved himself to be, you know, if there weren't any options, you'd just get on with it and you'd eat what you wanted. And if you were forced to kill an animal, you'd kill an animal, because that's what survival is all about. And I think we do have a very detached notion of food. And I mean, I came off 60 days on Desert Island, crikey, it was about 8 years ago, which was my original thing for Discovery Channel, with an undeniable eating disorder. I mean, I was utterly obsessed with food, and it did open my eyes to our slightly weird relationship with food. You know, we more eat for comfort than we do for hunger these
and
days.
Entertainment, yeah.
And entertainment, and it's become a pleasure thing rather than a function thing. Mm. And I think on the island, it took it back to more of a function thing. You know, we are providing for ourselves, we're putting calories in ourselves, and that feels wholesome, that feels good. Whereas at home, every time I eat, it seems to be laced with sort of guilt, or I shouldn't have eaten that, or maybe I should go for something else. So I do think as a society, we've got a little bit of our knickers in a twist about food. I certainly have.
We've done quite a bit about it on this podcast. Dr. Yo says that we've got an instinct to eat because we never know where the next calorie is coming from. Mm. It's only in recent history of humans, the last maybe 50, 100 years, not even that probably, that we've had an abundance of food. Yeah. So normally you get food, you eat as much as you can because you don't know where the next meal's coming from.
So gorging is actually a natural thing.
It's a natural thing. And we don't know how some people's instincts for it are strong, or, you know, the hormone release is stronger than others. So when we're accusing people of overeating all the time, we don't know how hard their life is, you know, whereas in comparison to what we're going through. So
well, that's very true, because the reason that you can't have a pastry is because you won't be able to stop. Whereas a lot of people, sorry.
Why am I laughing? I'm so sorry. The way she looked at you, like, I might as well just stitch him up on the old pastry front.
Just disgust, really, isn't it?
No, it's like, when we went to Discovery this morning, he actually had to take the whole plate of, like, the bowl of pastries and take it outside the room. So he said, if I have one, I'll eat them all. So he has to completely avoid it, whereas I have the ability to have... My family hates me because I'll go to the fridge and I'll have a bite of a biscuit, or I'll have a bite of a pork pie and I'll put it back because I want to know what it tastes like, but I don't want to eat the whole thing because I'm like, I don't need that. I don't want to eat that amount of stuff. I'm not that hungry. I just want to know what it tastes like. So my family hates me for it. Whereas, like, we're almost polar opposites in that sense. So I can understand that you don't know how hard someone else's life is.
I want to talk about both your books, but just quickly, what did your families think about you doing this?
I think it's interesting. I don't think our family, they don't mind it anymore. Yeah. I think it was when I saw the change in my mum when I was in Mexico, sailed back to England, and I was texting her and she said, Laura, I'll buy you a flight, just get on a plane. And I was like, no, made my mind up, mum. I'll see you in a couple months. And then hilariously, there was a boat that went missing in the Atlantic, and she texted me saying, is it your boat that went missing? And I got it when I reached land going, Mum, I didn't have any signal. How did you expect me? And I had loads of texts of her worrying, being like, you're not texting me back. How do I know you're safe? Yeah.
Do you think you two could have a life without adventure? Could you just retire from it now, do you think?
I often dream of that grasp on the other side of the fence and do think, you know, wouldn't it be nice just to do a bit of gardening and spend more time doing up the house? But I don't think we would be happy at all.
There's no finish line here.
I think it has become, it has evolved beyond chest beating. And I think now we're really lucky to be in a position where we can keep doing these challenges. And I think it's really nice to be humbled. You know, I remember coming out of the army, you know, and I was a captain and people saluted me every day. And I remember the first job I took was for a building labourer. And we went to Travis Perkins and the guy behind the counter said, "Oi boy, go and put those bags of cement in the car." And, you know, the day before I'd been a captain. And it was, I really wanted to jump over the counter and fill his head in, but I didn't. And looking back on it, it's so good to have that sort of artificial hot air blowing up your ass being stripped away from you time and time again.
Right,
and I think these shows do that. They humble you. And you're never really in control, and they keep you learning and all that stuff. So
stepping in your son's poo does do that.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah, I wouldn't want it any different. We have a great life, and I think it's healthy for us as well.
What happens with the toilet? Do you get there immediately and dig a hole and start making toiletry things
with the little boy?
All three of you.
He didn't have any nappies, so he just pooped when he wanted, where he wanted, and we had to remember and clear it up quickly because if we forgot, we'd have to stand in it.
And did he try start training himself?
We tried, habit? But it didn't work. He was too young, really.
Well, yeah. No, I think we did try, and we said you go to the poo on the beach.
Yeah.
But then we realised the tide then comes in and then there isn't really a beach.
Right.
So the lines became very blurred. And then I realised it was more dangerous to teach him to run to the beach when actually the tide's coming in. And that if I saw him running to the beach, I'd then have to run with him.
Right.
And it became almost this dangerous thing to try and teach him there. And then it was like go into the jungle to go to the loo there. No, wait, there might be something there. So it was almost trying to teach him to tell us before he needed it so we could go take him there. And then obviously he didn't have that ability to pre-warn us because he wasn't even two yet. And it became...
So what was about toilet paper?
The sea.
So you just go in straight away?
Yeah. You just have a little wash.
Salty bum.
Dig a hole. Yeah.
Salty bum, salty hair, salty everything. Yeah. But good for not... Cuts not getting infected and stuff.
That's true.
And what about sleep? Because obviously we all try and train our children to sleep through the night and have a nap during the day. What happens to his sleep?
That was very difficult. That was probably one of the hardest things for me, because at home you have a cot and you put your child in the cot and you say, you're going to bed now and you can walk out, and then they might get a bit, oh, and then you go in and you soothe them. And that cot is a confined space, whereas we were lying on the floor. So Ran learned that he could just get up and walk off. So there was about a half an hour before we'd fall asleep of, no, Ran, time to lie down. Okay. No night. Oh, and he's up and off again. Brilliant. And it was just this half an hour every night of fetching him, bringing him back, lying him down. And I learned, I started singing him loads of stories like Cinderella. I impressed myself with my knowledge of all of the Disney films. I must say, I know every Thumbelina.
Right.
And every evening I would just sing... sing a story to him that was as long as and as theatrical or as dull as he needed in that time. And you just use your imagination to try and keep him engaged enough in you that he didn't want to run off, but not so engaged that he wouldn't fall asleep.
Yeah.
And I'm an awful singer.
Yeah, you are. I was super impressed with it. I mean, I think that is what Indigenous people do, don't they? They tell stories to each other, they entertain each other,
and the entertainment becomes the fire, I assume, sitting watching a fire. Yeah, a lot of hours spent doing that.
Jungle telly,
You've both got books coming out. I've got my questions to ask you, but let's go through the books quickly. Laura, Mountain of Dreams book.
Mm-hmm.
What's
Mountains
of Dreams. Tell us about that.
So the concept is real adventures by real people made digestible to sort of 4 to 8 year olds, and it follows real adventurers in their journeys and their explorations. So the first 5-part series is based on my cycling adventure through South America. And then the next book series will be of Ed's walking the Amazon. And then there's a lovely lady who is legally blind and rode a horse across Colombia. So it's finding a diverse in ability, gender, ethnic type, so that every child has someone to relate to. And it's just trying to inspire children at that young, influential age that there's more to life than lipsticks and low-cut tops, and trying to provoke questions in them about what's capable of the world and with real nice people that they can meet and Google. Yeah.
It's a great concept.
Thank you.
It's a really good idea. You know, obviously having three daughters, I'm always trying to, I spoke to you about this just before we went and started recording, I'm always trying to push them into doing exciting things. They're really into art, so that's good. You know, so they go around Lovely. Looking at exhibitions. God, my language.
I know.
but I'd like them to go on an expedition as well. What's your book about, Ed?
Expeditions Unpacked. Superficially, it's about kit and what the explorers took on their great expeditions into the unknown. But actually, it ended up being a more of a sort of delve into the psychology of explorers. Essentially, you know, why Robin Knox Johnson takes three crates of Tennant's lager on his world first, you know, circumnavigation of the world. And it's amazing just
the
jars of Marmite and the...
He
was the first man to sail single-handedly, non-stop around the world. So he didn't stop at any land at all. For about 3 months of his return journey up the coast of Africa, everyone thought he was dead. And then he was spotted off the coast of Portugal, I think it was. And then they realised he wasn't dead. And the Queen actually came down to meet the boat as it arrived on the English shores and knighted him on the spot, which is pretty fucking cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it was, yeah, why people took what they took, and, you know, were they flippant?
Nelly Bly took mum champagne with him
around
the world in 72 days. An accordion.
That's
exactly. a bit bizarre.
The most random things. And I just think it was a nice way, in a way that you can't interview these old explorers anymore, I think what they took with them just, I don't know, help to sort of bring their personalities to life a little bit.
I love the idea of this book. I suppose that's packing for these adventures is the hardest thing, which is why your concept of just arriving naked was such a brilliant one, because we always think, they got a pizza stuck away somewhere, or, you know, they got something going on. When you arrive naked, then that's it. Literally, that's
nothing
all you can do.
Nothing up your sleeve.
Nothing up your sleeve, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was... The naked survival thing, as much as thankfully I'm not doing it anymore because I'm 43 years old and no one wants to see a 40-something year old naked. It's still going on in America, and it was originated by our original program, Naked and Marooned. But it turned into potentially a little bit of a stunt, but it was literally off the back of Bear getting the negative press about, you know, staying in hotels and stuff. It was like, if we're going to do this for real, we really need to demonstrate that it's 100% real and you're starting with nothing. And so it was a good place to come from. It was like, not only does everyone know you're starting with nothing, but I don't know, it also made everything that much more intense. If I'd arrived with a pair of shoes on, a pair of trousers and this jacket, I could have run around an island and sort of sorted stuff out. But there's an extraordinary vulnerability with just being completely naked and barefoot and stepping onto an island. So I felt although it's slightly become circusy now, I think it was the right thing at the right time.
Yeah. And the weird thing is that he actually hates being naked. You'd think he was like a nudist and would take his kit off whenever he wanted. But at home, you hate being naked. So it was like a real vulnerable, put yourself out, try and expand.
Yeah, I'm not a rugby playing. Well, I do play rugby, but I'm not a willy waving rugby player at all. No.
Right. No. I suppose I've read enough books now to realise if I do end up on an island of some description without anything, I would be looking for water and shelter as my main things. Is that correct?
The four survival priorities are water, food, fire, and shelter. Yeah.
So it's all going on in this podcast. we've got stuff going.
Amazon delivery.
But yeah. No idea who's.
But the most important one being, water, I suppose. Cramp in my leg.
Can I ask you my questions that I ask everybody now? Have you been given them so you know what they are?
No.
Oh, okay. This should be interesting. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
Living in the present for me. I've spent a lot of my life focused on getting to the end of either expeditions or periods of time, and I think I've wished a lot of my life away. I wish, if there's any regrets and if there's any advice I would give to my son, it's just enjoy every single day as if it's your last. And for me, I think that's what I try to do every day now, rather than, you know, won't it be great when we've got the new kitchen extension, is just, you know, enjoying everything exactly as it is. You know, we've got a little boy, I've got a beautiful wife, you know, stop looking to the future and enjoy the present day.
And you always told me never to turn down a cup of tea.
Is that your advice?
No, that is I think mine is to always follow your dreams. And I don't want to be one of these sort of adventurers that says you need to get outdoors, you know, just be outdoors as much as you can. Because I think some people really like reading books, like your daughters. And if that's one of their dreams and their passion, that people should just follow their passions and where that takes them, and to keep their horizons and what they think they're able to do open. Because I hate the idea of people limiting themselves because they don't think they're worthy enough for their dreams. So just to follow their dreams wholeheartedly.
But people always, whenever I say that, people always go, it's all right for you because they've always got an excuse. But you don't need an excuse, do you?
No.
You just get out there and do it.
No.
Okay, next question. I'm expecting something good of you here, Ed, on this one. What's something you think people should know? I'm hoping it's some sort of survival thing you think everyone should know.
Just trying to sort through the multitude of things I could just...
Something I think people should know.
Skunks taste bad.
What, have you eaten a skunk?
I have eaten a skunk, yeah.
Why?
You've seen what he does, right?
Yeah, well, I have. I wouldn't have tried to catch a skunk because I'd assume I'd get covered in...
Yeah. Basically, I did cut the gland that sprays the yellow goo all over... people, I suppose, and it contaminated all the meat, and it was rank. It was disgusting. I was trying to catch a rabbit, but I used a rock fall trap and
right.
ended up caught a skunk instead by mistake in the Sonoran desert.
Would you eat anything?
I don't really have a problem, and again, in a weird way, it's annoying when people make all these horrible faces when they're eating stuff. In a survival situation, you just appreciate any calories that are going in.
I've seen you gag so many times on your program.
Yeah, but that's not gagging out of... I'm not performing. I'm just gagging because...
It's great.
Because it's made me gag. Something everyone should know.
Well, there was something that I said ages ago in like an interview, and you guys were like, oh, that's really...
The complimentary man and female...
No, it was like a really random little...
All right, I'll move on to the next question whilst you're thinking about it. Any life hacks? Maybe travel tips, how to give up something, how to clean something, whatever. Have you got any of those? I was expecting some really good answers from these.
Life hacks. I mean, I had a bit of a breakdown about 2 years after I got off... Off 60 days on the island, and
I realised how badly that was talking.
Whatever you say now, Ed, no one's listening. Everyone's going. Oh, we want to know what it is. It's so exciting.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh my god.
The foot on the duck tooth. The duck tooth on the foot. That's it.
Well, which question are we answering? Let's finish you, Ed.
Right, okay.
We'll go to Laura.
You can come back to you, yeah, Laura, is that right?
Sorry, I blocked you out whilst I was thinking, and then
you're still going there. Basically, I couldn't get out of bed. I was crying. I was the psychologist that I eventually saw said that I have no doubt that if your courage was a bank account, you've normally got loads, but at the moment you're massively overdrawn. And I had to go into therapy, and I had to stop filming the first series of Marooned with Discovery Channel because of the fact that I just didn't have any courage. I was literally, the phase of packing was just too much for me. And I can't believe my wife's still laughing. I got introduced. I was like, "Do you want to go into medication for this slight depression?" It was fear depression, and I said no. And the other option was meditation, and bizarrely, I use at home an app called Headspace.
Yep.
And in survival situations, I meditate as well, and I think it's the most amazing thing. Like to get, I call myself heady when I get a really confused and anxious and worried and stuff like this. And from a survival perspective, it's brilliant because once I centre myself, everything just seems to flow and everything is much easier. Fucking hell, Laura.
I could hear you turning to look at me.
Look, by the way, can I just describe, Laura's had to turn away. She's like at school when you've lost the plot and you can't stop laughing.
It's because he's still talking about something so serious.
And you're talking about duct tape.
Keep reliving this.
Life hack, meditate. I think it's great. It's not all about sitting cross-legged with joss sticks and stuff like that. I think it's a really nice thing to just have a little... the ability to step back from the confusion of life. The ability to realise that thoughts and emotions are autonomous.
Okay, so have you got a quick tip then on that? How to get into meditation?
I mean, personally, I am a bit of a cynic. And yet for me, the access route into meditation for me was this app called Headspace.
Right, okay.
And I think it's no nonsense. It's you know, there's no joss sticks. There's no hairy underarms. It's literally just no nonsense. Headspace for your mind.
Laura, which question are you answering?
I'm gonna destroy your something
What's something you think people should know, or any life hacks, which is the one you're going for?
So when we were like walking on the Larapinta Trail in Australia, I started getting sore feet, and Ed just told me to put duct tape on my feet because it stops you getting blisters. That's it. That was it. That is just put, you know,
gold.
if your shoes are rubbing, put duct tape on your feet.
That's the highlight of this podcast. It's right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
That's why I was laughing so much, because I just completely undermined his super intense spiritual journey with... That's it.
Do you meditate?
No.
No, you should try it. Right. Final two questions. Can you recommend a book? Is there any books you like to read?
There's this really lovely children's book called Mountains of Dreams,
Mountains of Dreams,
yeah.
Your one.
No.
Is there a book that you like that you think we should read?
Really? Jack Canfield. I really like listening to Jack Canfield.
What's that? Chicken Soup for Your Soul.
Yeah, and The Secret. I think that's a very well-known but very good documentary and audiobook.
Yeah, well, I mean, we both, again, I suppose in a weird way, I don't think either of us would describe ourselves as academics, and yet we do sort of believe in self-development, and we've got
Eckhart Tolle is a really nice
Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now is definitely one that I've probably read 12 times, which doesn't again say much for my intelligence that I need to read any book 12 times, but Passionate Marriage, I thought that was an extraordinary book about holding on to yourself in the company of other people. And
differentiation.
Differentiation, yeah. I think, you know, I think a lot of marital breakdowns get put down to lack of communication, which is utter tosh, quite frankly. And actually, it's the ability to hold on to yourself, to be yourself, but to not have to adapt yourself to get a certain response from your partner. I think that's huge.
And not putting the responsibility of one's happiness on the other partner. I think we expect our partner to make us happy. Like, why isn't he making me happy anymore? Why isn't he making the effort? And most of the time it stems from that person not being able to make themselves happy, or not making the effort for themselves and then the other person. Yeah. And it sort of...
kind of hand-holding yourself through life, actually, without needing other people to bolster you. Yeah.
Okay. Final question. What's the meaning of life?
26-year-old wife.
Okay. Well done.
Nice. I was going to say,
looks could kill.
You know, love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
And family, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
43-year-old husband.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Man, Woman, Child, Wild, 29th of September, Discovery Channel. And they can follow you. Just give us your Twitter addresses and your Instagrams quickly.
At @Ed_Stafford is Twitter. Yeah.
At @LauraBingham93.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Cheers, Tim. Thank you.
Being married to you makes me feel like a 43-year-old. Just saying. We're the same age mentally.
You better go before this marriage ends. See you later. Thank you.
Cheers, Tim.
That was Ed and Laura, Man, Woman, Child, Wild, as I've just said, is out on the 29th of September, Discovery Channel. That was a really good interview.
That was good fun, wasn't it?
Great conversation with the two of them. Really enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed the documentary as well. Whenever I watch these things, I always think I'd like to give it a go.
Would you actually do it, though?
I'd love to.
Would you take Jamie with your daughter with you?
No. Actually, I'd be intrigued to see how all three of my daughters would be if we were left somewhere like that. Yeah. I'd like to see, especially the twins, the 7-year-old twins. I'd love to see them without their mobile phones.
Well, books is the thing that they would miss, isn't it?
Yeah, they do like reading, but I'd just get rid of everything. I'd like to see them and how they would just see them come alive again. It really made me start thinking as well, speaking to them there about whether I should, I've got my smartphone addiction, which I just can't help. And I'm wondering one day whether I should just get rid of it. Just get rid of the smartphone. Just not have it in my life at all.
I don't think you could do it. I wish you would.
It would make life so much easier, wouldn't it? But I'd love to just be... Would you like to do it? Just go...
No.
Why not?
I can think of anything worse.
Why?
I love a wet wipe.
Seriously, why wouldn't you do it? Because I'd like to see whether I could survive or not.
No, I'd hate it. I know I couldn't. I know I'd be rubbish at it.
Because I feel in my mind that I would survive. Yeah, that I feel I've watched enough of these shows to know that I could survive. Though yeah. I don't know. Is it? Anyway, maybe one day I'll end up on one of those TV shows. I got asked to do one once. And I couldn't do it. I can't remember which one it was. It was one of those where you end up on an island surviving. I absolutely love to have done it. Anyway, this podcast is sponsored by Cooker, spelt Quooker, pronounced Cooker. 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. It does your hot water. It does your cold water. It does your 100 degree boiling hot water. It also does chilled filter water and chilled sparkling filtered water, which Mark keeps drinking, keeps using.
Yeah, sorry for using the water tap, Tim.
I do love it. I absolutely love it. I was around someone's house the other day and they were trying to boil vegetables from cold water. And I was thinking, oh my God, it's like...
It was like watching a survival programme, was it?
It's like Victorian times.
See, that's what you're saying. You like to go on a survival show. And yeah. You couldn't take your cooker tap with
you. Can I take my hot water tap with me? Can I take my cooker tap? Also, our friends, Beer 52, they like to do a bit of advertising on this podcast.
Yes, Beer 52. Beer 52 are a craft ale and beer subscription discovery company, basically. And what they do is they send you out each month a case of beer, and you get a snack and a magazine, and the beers are from all around the world. They partner up with different independent breweries and make some really unique drinks, which we absolutely love. I expect if you've listened to this podcast before, you would have heard us take delivery and the enjoyment and excitement that comes with that. And you can claim a case of free beer through the podcast if you go to beer52.com/lovejoy. You just pay the postage and packaging, which is £5.95, which I think, that's less than a pint now, isn't it? And you get eight free beers, snack, magazine, and they are great, and I can't recommend highly enough.
I got drunk the other night.
What?
I'm not proud of myself.
You didn't drink, not on the Beer 52 beers.
No, because the Beer 52...
Because you drink responsibly on those.
Yeah, the concept of the Beer 52 is you get it and it's a tasting
It's like
thing.
A beer tapas.
Yeah, it's like, it is. You taste it and you decide whether you like it or not. You can always order some off them if you like it. But no, I went out and I did that. I did the classic thing of, I really like the taste of beer, as you know. The older I get, the more I love beer.
Oh, it's getting
and
ridiculous.
I had a lovely pint of pale ale. God. And then someone said, would you like another one? I thought, it's quite early in the day, but okay, I'll have one more.
How early?
It's about 6:30.
Oh, right. Oh, I thought you said like 10:30 in the morning.
No. And then someone said, would you like another one? And I went, no, I'm okay. But they did that classic thing
of
coming back with one anyway and said, I thought you would like one anyway. So I'm 3 in.
Oh, dear.
3?
That's the Lovejoy tipping point, isn't it?
So then someone else said, would you like a beer? And I said, no. And they said, a half. And I went, okay, I'll have a half.
And they got you a full one.
No, they got me a half. So I poured the half into my other one. So then I'm 3.5.
Right.
Anything over 3.
Yeah. Tipping point.
World
of
trouble.
Yeah.
I think I left the pub at maybe 11 or half 11.
That's not bad. You made 3.5 pints last over 4 hours.
Oh, no, I might have gone on from the 3.5.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
Probably about 7 o'clock.
Wow.
Then I filled up the last, well, maybe a bit part
do not put that nut in your, do not I, put that I nut
filled,
in your mouth.
I filled up the last 4 hours with, you know, conversation. And,
yes, and more
and then woke up the next day. And I did that classic thing that we've all done, which is I'm never, ever drinking again. But I do like the taste of beers, but I've decided I'm not going to get drunk again, ever.
No.
I'm not because it's such a bad idea. Drinking, as you just said, responsibly and sensibly is a great idea to have one or two pints, get a nice little tiny little buzz on, enjoy the taste of the drink.
Yeah.
To drink a ridiculous amount of pints is such a stupid idea. It really is a ridiculous idea.
Well, what happens if, say, maybe go out and have one alcoholic beer and one non-alcoholic beer?
Well, I don't like those non-alcoholic beers.
Have you tried the Heineken ones? They're quite good. And there's a BrewDog do one as well. No. Nanny State, which is very good. Tastes like a pale ale.
No. I tend to just like to drink water or just... Yeah. I like one pint and then go back and watch Netflix or something, even though I'm on Netflix detox. Maybe I should be on everything detox. Maybe I should go and live on a desert island somewhere. That's probably the best way for me. If I go there, then I won't have my smartphone, I can't drink too much beer, and I can't watch Netflix. There you go. That's my future. Someone find me an island. Find an island for TV Tim and get on that. Right, that's it for this week's podcast. I'd like to hear from you. Let us know what you think about everything. The email address is dearlovejoypodcast@gmail.com. You can contact me at Tim Lovejoy. And my Instagram address, I keep on getting it wrong, by the way, so I changed it.
Right.
Someone already had mine, so let me see what mine actually is now.
But they're not on TV.
Tim Lovejoy, TV Tim didn't get Tim Lovejoy. Tim Lovejoy _official is my Instagram. If you want to approach me on that, send me any sort of mail you want. That'd be great. And we will see you very soon. So for the time being, peace and love, Joy.
Bye.